length of time of talking about marginal models for binary data. Now I'm going to do marginal models for count data. It's going to be a pretty brief example because really many of the things we said for marginal models for binary data also applied for count data. Now, when we have a count, so examples of count data are the number of panic attacks occurring during a 6-month interval after receiving a treatment, numbers of sexual partners in the 3-month period, recorded in an HIV intervention program, number of infant deaths per month. So basically you have a number of events occurring within a particular time interval. And when the outcome variables have this nature, we are use a Poisson regression, okay? So the Poisson distribution is very common for modeling count data, and so I'm writing here that the probability that your outcome, that's the random variable, will have a certain number of events is described by this distribution. Now, a very peculiar, important characteristic of the Poisson distribution is that the mean is exactly equal to the variance. So remember, one of the most important messages of the LDA is that when you model continuous data, you kind can focus your attention of specifying model for the mean and specifying model for the variance, like almost independently. Now, when you don't have continuous data anymore, but you are dealing with the binary data or count data, the mean and the variance are tied together. And in fact, for binary data, we show that the variance of a binary random variable is actually the probability times 1 minus the probability. Okay, so the variance and the mean were linked in this way. For Poisson, actually, the assumption is really that the variance is equal to the mean. Every time you have the data and for count data, you can just calculate the empirical mean and the empirical variance. And every time you have that the variance is larger than the mean, it means that your data are over-dispersed. Or if the variance is lower than the mean, your data are under-dispersed. So it means that your assumption that the data are distributed as a Poisson distribution is violated. Okay? And so also modeling the correlation and doing generalized estimating equation is also a way of getting around this problem and accounting for over-dispersion. And we'll see that in a minute. So the data set, the example that we will keep focusing to illustrate the use of Poisson regression for longitudinal data is the epileptic seizure data set, where you have a clinical trial of 59 epileptics. For each patient, it was recorded the number of epileptic seizures at the baseline period of 8 weeks. And then at the 8 weeks, so that's what I was describing on this graph, you have this 8-week baseline period at the beginning, and at the end of the 8 weeks, so where everyone is measured the number of epileptic seizures. And then at the end of the 8 weeks, the patients were randomized either to a treatment or to a control, and they were giving a drug, And then it was measured the number of epileptic seizures for each patient subsequently at each 2 weeks period. Okay? So it's a longitudinal data set because each person corresponds to a vector of measurement, which will be the number of epileptic seizures for that person during the first 8 weeks, 20, and then the number of epileptic seizures that the same person gets in the subsequent, 4 2-week interval, okay? So each person could have 20 the first 8 weeks, and then could be, 6, 8, 5, 6, right? So it's a vector of outcome. And it's a longitudinal data set, again, because you may assume that the count for the same person will be correlated, right? So that's and what we're going to do that, well, we start with the Poisson regression for, so we have started with the marginal models for count data. It means that the scientific question here that we're trying to address is the Progabide, that is our drug of interest, reducing the rate of epileptic seizures on average for the entire population. You could see this model like a standard Poisson regression without accounting for the correlation in the data, and as usual, you could get wrong inference and wrong standard error, then you could conclude that, you know, you basically could make the wrong inference. So what we're going to do, we're going to generalize it, so then we can estimate a population average treatment effect accounting for the within subject correlation. How we do that? By using generalized estimating equations, okay? So now to just look, give a quicker look to the data. So remember, we say, well, we assume that these data are Poisson. Well, let's start saying how reasonable it is to assume that these data are Poisson. So what this table shows here is for at each visit, both for the people that have been treated, they're not being treated. So at visit one, you're going to have you're going to have a distribution of number of epileptic seizures in the population for the people that have been treated. And so for that distribution, you can calculate the mean, you calculate the variance, and you can take the ratio of the variance divided by the mean. Okay, so at visit one, you have you know, something like 25 people that have been assigned to the treatment. And at visit one, you have 25 people. For each person, you have the number of epileptic seizures during the first 2 weeks. Okay, that will have a distribution. You have a distribution of numbers. You calculate the mean. You calculate the variance. You take the ratio. And if the Poisson distribution was a reasonable assumption, or there was no over-dispersion in the data, well, that variance should be close to 1. And the variance is 36. Okay? So, see, actually, there is a very large, higher, you know, over dispersion, or we call extra Poisson variation. Okay? Some of this over dispersion could actually model it quite well by doing generalized estimating equation with robust standard error, because basically what it does is allow to estimate the variance in addition to what is assumed into a Poisson regression. Remember, when we do GEE, we are not marrying any sampling distribution, remember? We're doing generalized estimating equation. We are basically simply finding a solution of a score equation, okay? So doing generalized estimating equation is also a way for accounting for these extra Poisson variation. So let's see how can we analyze this data by doing a GEE with Poisson regression. And before, I just want to tell you a little more about what is a Poisson regression model in longitudinal data. Basically, we say the yij as a Poisson distribution with the mean mu ij. Sorry, I had to put the subscript here. And now we assume that the link is a log. Before it was the logit, now we assume a log link. So we have the log of mu ij is a linear function of the covariates, which you can, you know, rewrite like beta 0 plus beta 1 xij. And now it's important that we are capable of interpreting the regression coefficient beta. And beta describes the change in the log of the population average count per unit change in x. So now before we had for unit change in x, what was the change in the log of? Remember? For binary data. Now we have for unit change in x, what is the change simply in the log of the average count. So, and we'll see this better. So E of beta 1 represents the ratio of average seizure rate measures the number of seizures for 2 weeks interval for the treated patients compared to the control. Okay? So let's assume you simply have this Poisson regression model, and xij is being assigned or not assigned to a treatment, okay? So you have the E of beta 1 will be equal to this ratio. So this is the expected value of the number of epileptic seizures over 2 weeks interval being treated divided by the expected number of the epileptic seizure being not treated. Okay? So E of beta 1 is called rate ratio. Okay? And so if beta 1 is less than 0, it means that E of beta 1 is less than 1. It means that this quantity, the expected number of seizure being treated, it's less than the expected number of epileptic seizure being not treated. So it's evidence that the treatment is effective. Okay? So before we were talking with population average odds and odds ratio, now we deal with the population average rate and rate ratio. And a few, if I will not be able to cover all the material, the lecture, I think we are lecture 10, and end of lecture 10 or the beginning of lecture 11, I did the for Poisson regression, the step-by-step parameter interpretation that I did for logistic regression that we went together. So even if I will not be able to cover the material, if you look at your lecture notes, I did that in a very detailed way, so you will have all the definition. But we will look at in this particular example one more time. So if beta 1, that is basically the interpretation of the regression coefficient when you have a Poisson regression. Now, there are a couple of things that we have to think about. So one, I told you that so there are two challenges with analyzing this data set. Number one is the data over dispersed. And number two, that you have irregular time periods. Because, so one is over dispersed, and you saw why, right? So actually, this table is something that you should do every time you're dealing with the Poisson data. If you have the Poisson data, if you have a distributional count, before feeding a Poisson regression model, calculate the mean of the count, calculate the variance of the count, calculate the ratio, and if the ratio is equal to 350, you know that you have to use over-dispersed Poisson data. You can do that in SAS, in state, and everywhere. So you can estimate the parameter of over-dispersion. Because if you don't do that, you assume the over-dispersion is 1, and the variance that you're getting of your regression coefficient will be totally off. Okay. Yeah. That's perfectly fine. You will have the over dispersion, the estimate of the dispersion will be close to 1. Yeah. So maybe you want to do it all the time when you can. Absolutely. So this is very important for longitudinal data. We have done the same thing at each visit, right? Now, you see, this looks like there could be some evidence of differential over dispersion between treated and non-treated. See, it looks like that for treated, maybe the over dispersion could be higher, and for untreated could be lower. But actually, I don't see big evidence of that. So, you know, but you could also allow for over dispersion different by group. But most of the time, allowing for a common over dispersion is the same. So, challenge number one is that these are over dispersed data. Okay. And doing GE allow us to handle this issue. Number two is that you have irregular time period, because we had, when I told you I have a vector of measurement, but the baseline number of counts of epileptic seizure was done over an 8-week period. And then you have 2 weeks, and then you have the number of epileptic seizure every 2 weeks. So when you think about a rate in Poisson regression, you always model a rate, so the number of counts that occur for a given time. Okay? So if you have at the beginning a longer time period, you have to account for that. Otherwise, your inference is totally balanced off. Of course, the first count is going to be larger because you are looking at how many epileptic seizures you have for a longer period of time. Right? So how you deal with that? Well, in Poisson regression, you deal with that in a very simple way, which is called the offset. So this one is basically you allow for over dispersion, and you know, you can allow a common over dispersion, or you can allow for over dispersion by group. And the second one are these irregular time. And that is also something very important for you to digest, because again, it's something happening all the time, independently from LDA, when you have account data, okay? So suppose the interval times, Tij, during which the events are observed, are not the same for all subjects, okay? Which, you know, LDA can happen very, very often, actually. Even if you don't have LDA, you could have some people, you observe the number of epileptic seizures over 8 weeks, and others over 2 weeks, others over 1 week, and so on, right? So you cannot treat all these counts in the same way. So you can tackle this problem by decomposing the marginal mean into a product of two things. One, it is a lambda ij, which is the number of events. So EOIJ is the number of events for unit interval, where I should actually look at this. Basically you're right, EOIJ has a lambda ij times Tij. Lambda ij is the number of events for unit interval, which you can take 2 weeks, and the Tij is the length of time intervals, 2 weeks, and then you had in your regression the offset here, which is called, you know, in this case will be 8 weeks. So you allow for a different offset, you allow for an offset, which is basically, it's not even estimating an intercept, it's just adding that variable when you do your postnatal regression. And that is the one way of, actually, I think the only way and the straightforward way. So in this way, you always are going to interpret these as the number of epileptic seizure over 2 weeks interval. And then you account for the 8 weeks interval at the beginning by adding this log of Tij. And we'll see how it's going to work for our case. So let's see how we analyze our epileptic seizure data set. Okay? So we have a clinical trial of 59 epileptics. And we have a 31 patient that receive an antiepileptic drug, which is called the Progardide. 28 receive a placebo. And so they also, one thing I didn't tell you, but you will see in the textbook, they also measure the age, and the age distribution between treated and non-treated actually is very, you know, it's comparable. So these two populations are matched by age. So the question is whether the Progabide reduces the rate of seizures. Okay, so is this drug effective? So what I'm going to show you is a very rudimental analysis, which you can do with your calculator, okay? And then the GE, okay? So you see, what we have is that for the people that are assigned to the placebo, you want to see whether the number of epileptic seizures after it's been assigned to the placebo is higher or lower with respect to the baseline number of counts. So you take the ratio of epileptic seizures pre-post treatment for the non-treated, and if you compare the number of epileptic seizures pre-post treated for the treated, and see if this rate ratio change or not. So let's look at the table so you don't get too much confused. Okay, so let's see what this table shows. So what I did is I take, so these are the people, this is the people that have been assigned at the Progabide. And what they have is the seizure rate. So the seizure rate is based on the average number of seizure rates for 2 weeks for all the people that are during the baseline period, it's 7.9, okay? So that is the average number of seizures over 2 weeks period for the people that are being treated at the beginning, you know, prior doing any randomization. Okay? So I will call these actually this is what we are looking. So the average number, so this is at the trigger, I'm sorry. Okay. So I denote by y con zero is basically denoting the number of epileptic seizures at baseline. Okay? So that would be the average number of epileptic seizures at baseline for the people that have been treated. And that's the 7.9. And then you can take the average number of epileptic seizures after the treatment for the people that have been treated, and that is 7.96. So if you take this number divided by this number, this is a rate ratio, and it's telling you what has been the increase or the decrease in the average rate of epileptic seizure post-treatment with respect to pre-treatment for the people that got the drug. Okay? So if these two numbers are identical, it means that the people that got the drug have the same number of epileptic seizures after they got the drug with respect to what they had before. If this number is less than one, it's evident that for the people that got the drug, the number of epileptic seizures after they got the drug is lower than what they had at baseline. Okay? But now we want to do the same thing for the one that have the placebo, so that you can control for individual level characteristics. And again, this is the number of epileptic seizures at baseline for people that had the placebo, and that is the number of epileptic seizures at baseline for the people that had the placebo. So actually, if you compare, it looks like for people that had the placebo, the number of epileptic seizures after they got the placebo, it's higher than the number of epileptic seizures that at the baseline with respect to the treated. So the bottom line is I'm estimating what we call a cross-product ratio or rate ratio, which is the ratio of the average number of epileptic seizures pre-treatment, post-treatment, for the people that have been treated, divided by the ratio of the average number of epileptic seizures at baseline, number of epileptic seizures at baseline with respect to visit 1 to 4 for the people that have not been treated. So I'm basically comparing change in the rate of epileptic seizure pre-post randomization for the people that be treated and for the people that not be treated. And if that rate ratio is 1, it means that the randomization, the fact they have been assigned to a treatment or no treatment, had no impact on your change in the rate of epileptic seizure. So the treatment was not effective. Okay? You see, this is the population average rate ratio. Before we were working with odds ratio, population average odds ratio. Now we are working with the population average rate ratio. And then you can do the same thing if you have a post-hoc regression with random effect, because that will be the same type of analysis, but now you're conditional to the random effect. Okay? So the bottom line is that this rate ratio, so it's equal to 7.96 divided by 7.9. That's the numerator, and the denominator is 8.6 divided by 7.7. So this is actually 8.9. We are not calculating any confidence interval. I mean, this is a crude analysis. But you see, it's 0.9, it means that there could be that there's been a larger decline in the rate of epileptic seizure for the treated with respect to the non-treated. Okay? So it's just some very weak evidence, but that's something that, again, allow you to explore the data and understand what's going on. Now, apparently, the reason why you have this number here Because apparently there was a particular patient, patient number 207, which had was an outlier, which had an extremely huge high number of epileptic seizures. So this table also recalculated this all the same quantity by excluding that particular patient, and actually you get a ratio which is even lower. Okay. Is everyone with me about the interpretation of this table and that parameter? So now what we're going to do the real thing. We're going to do generalized estimating equation and estimate the same quantity, but providing what we hope reasonable standard error around. Okay, that accounts for the within subject correlation for the over dispersion. So you see, it is, you know, this data set, there are a few tricks that we have to keep in mind. You have the irregularities in the time period. You have the both. You have a period component, and you have a treatment component. And we're actually looking at the interaction between the time and between the period and the treatment. So this is how we're going to specify our Poisson regression model. We take the log of expected value of the number of epileptic seizures for subject I during a time period J, which we assume that our unit time period is 2 weeks, and we allow for this offset to allow that we have 8 weeks time interval at baseline. We have an intercept beta zero, and then we have five visits, J is equal to 0, 1, 2, 3, and 4. Visit 0 is baseline. And then you have, you know, the first week, 2 weeks, 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 59 patients. You see this offset will be equal to 8, J equals 0, because at baseline you have 8 weeks, and will be equal to 2, for J equal 1, 2, and 3, and 4. Okay? So that is the interpretation of the offset. It's pretty nice. And then we have two covariates. One, which is the XI1. You see, both covariates does not vary with time. So here we cannot do the analysis that we did for the respiratory infection, where you can look at the cross-sectional parameter, the longitudinal parameter, because your covariates are just fixed with time. So you have this XI1, which is the period, which is a 1 if you are post-randomization, and 0 if you are baseline. And then you have X2, which is basically that, which is a binary variable of whether you have been assigned to a treatment or to a control. Okay? So, see, if we're going to specify all the different combinations, actually, maybe we should do that. Okay, I'm going to, you guys have all of that? Well, I'm going to keep the number. I hope you will remember the name and the class. So I just want to give you, write down the parameter interpretation, okay? Because I think it might be. So I'm just going to take 4 cases. Let's assume it's working. So this is something that's to do in any situation. So let's take 4 cases. XI1 equals to XI2 equals 0. Okay, that's case 1. So you're going to have the log of EOYIJ given X1 equals X2 equals 0 is going to be equal to log of TIJ plus beta 0. Let's take the case XI1 is equal 1, XI2 is equal 0. Then you're going to have the log of EOYIJ given X1 is equal 1 and X2 is equal 0. It's going to be log of TIJ plus beta 0. So X1 is 1, so we keep beta 1. and then beta 2 and beta 3 are 0 because we multiply x2, which is 0. Then we have xi1 is 0, xi2 is 1, and then you write the log of e of yij given x1 is 0, x2 is 1. That would be the log of tij plus beta 0 plus beta 2. And finally, you're going to have xi1 equal 1, xi2 equal 1. And so you're going to have the log of yij, x1 equal x2 equal 1. Oh boy, I should have started with this because that was the longest to write. Uh-oh. Okay, that would be log of tij plus beta 0 plus beta 1 plus beta 2 plus beta 3. Okay? Are there mistakes here? Can you see what I did? I basically specified, boy, my handwriting is terrible, but I specified this model under all four combinations of your covariates. Okay? So why I did that? Because I want to give you the parameter interpretation. So, you see, beta 1, if you now look at the first two here, so if you look at the first here only, I always take the one that doesn't run. Okay? So you're going to have that. Right. So E of beta 1 is going to be equal to the expected value of yij given xi1 equal 1, x2 equals 0, divided by the expected value yij given x1 equals x2 equals 0. So E of beta 1 will be the change. So that will be the pre-post. So these will be the change in the average rate of epileptic seizures for the people that have not been treated, because X2 is always equal to zero, from baseline to post. Okay. And similar, beta 2. So in any case, I can, you know, I don't have another time to do all the equation, but you see, what I'm getting into is, after you have been writing, after you specify all the possible combinations, then you can rewrite your cross ratio, your cross product ratio, as a function of the parameters in the model. Okay, so then you know what is going to be the interpretation of all the different parameters. And so here, basically, beta 1 is the main effect. You see, beta 1 is the main effect for the visit. The visit is going to tell you what is going to be the change in the rate of epileptic seizure from the baseline with respect to you know, post-randomization. X2, it's going to be the main effect of the treatment. But really, the parameters here that we are interested is a beta 3, because it's the interaction between the time and treatment. Because we would like to know, it's not enough to say people that have been treated had a larger number of epileptic seizures than people that have not been treated. Because we want to compare with respect to their own baseline. And so we want to say, if the change in the rate of epileptic seizure baseline post-randomization for the treated is lower than the change in the rate of epileptic seizure for pre-post for the non-treated. So the parameter of interest here is really beta 3. And the beta 3 I can show you that actually you can do it by yourself, but E of beta 3 is equal to, well, I'm not sure if I have enough space, but it would be equal to E of Y given, I think if I can get this right, X1 equal 1, X2 equal 1, divided by E of Y given, X2 is the treatment, right? Yes. So X1 equals 0, X2 equal 1, and then will be divided by E of Y given X1 equal 1, X2 equals 0, divided by E of Y, X1 equals X2 equals 0. Which is the same parameter we had in the table before. So E of beta 3 is given by the ratio of two ratios. The ratio here is the change, so it's the ratio of epileptic seizure for the people that be treated, because it's also X2 equal 1, pre-randomization versus post-randomization, divided by this other ratio, which is comparing the number of epileptic seizures. So it's always comparing the people who have not been treated. X2 is always equal to 0. And that looks at the number of epileptic seizures post-treatment divided by the number of epileptic seizures pre-treatment. Okay? So if you take what I'm writing in the blackboard, and if you take 1, 2, 3, and 4, get E, you know, write it as E to this quantity, you will see that this rate ratio is actually E of beta 3, which is our parameter of interest. Okay? You guys totally lost about us? So what I did, I start by postnatal regression. I wrote down the expected number of epileptic seizure under the four possible conditions, which are the four possible combinations of the covariates, okay? So you have this quantity. Take this quantity and write it in this way, and what you will get, everything else will simplify. What you will get will be E to beta 3. That's all I'm saying, okay? And E of beta 3 is the interaction between time and treatment. And it basically is a ratio of ratio, okay? Questions? Yes, please. You mean these and these? The only reason I keep these is because you have irregular time periods. The only reason why you have a TIJ is that offset to allow for the fact that baseline. That you are based on that you count the number of epileptic seizures of 8 weeks period, and after only up 2 weeks. If a baseline was only 2 weeks, I didn't need that at all, right? So, see, you have it actually here. So E of beta 1 is the ratio of the average seizure rate after the treatment to before the treatment for the placebo group. Oh, I'm so glad actually I got it right. So this is one. See, I'm actually consistent sometimes, okay? So you see what I did, basically, if you take this quantity, take E of, and take the ratio, you're gonna have E of beta 1. And so beta 3 is all what, this is what I was trying to communicate, is the parameter of interest that represents the difference in the logarithm of the post to pre-treatment ratio between the progabide and the placebo group. So actually, I write it here again. Okay, so actually here it is. So smart, I've done that. So this is the definition. Okay, so why I did all that work? So in fact, you see, I just take that four denominator there and I just apply, and what you get is E of beta 3. Okay? And so I was putting these because I said, you see, a denominator says for everybody that has been assigned to the treatment, TET, what is the change of the rate of epileptic seizure at baseline versus like the visit divided by the same thing for everyone, you know, for the people who have been assigned to the placebo. Yeah. That's a very, very good point. Yes, that's the assumption it's making. No, it's not hard to do because after you account for the offset, after you have accounted for the offset, that problem is solved. So what she's asking a good question. She's saying, what we are doing, we are comparing the average number of epileptic seizure after randomization versus pre-randomization. So we basically, but she said it's possible that you might have that over time you might get better. So you might want to compare the change in epileptic seizures at visit one versus the baseline as well as at visit two with respect to the baseline. And you might be that visit two, the change is you have a larger decline, okay? So during I'm reformulating your question, I think I got the answer. So yes, so you can do that. And how you do that? Well, see, what we do is, we have assumed in the model that the time variable is a binary. Or you are a baseline, or you are after baseline. But here, you can take, first of all, you can define four binary variables, one for each visit. So you're going to have one different parameter that compare the rate of epileptic seizure of visit one versus baseline, and visit two versus baseline, as well as visit two versus visit one, and so on. Or you could even have it as a time covariate, a time which will have value one, two, and three, and say, what is going to be the change in the average epileptic seizure for every 2 weeks interval increment? Yeah, right. So we have done it this way because it was easy at the beginning to get the parameter interpretation dealing with a binary. But no, that's an excellent point, yeah. And it will be actually a more realistic model because you're actually right, you might get better. I said, or just say get better or not get better. Yeah, that's a good point. Good. So what we did, we actually know how to fit this model. We did generalized estimating equation, and there are different type of correlation structure that can be used. I think that the base on the analysis that used in the book had an exchangeable, yes, it just has an exchangeable correlation structure. And it also allows to estimate this correlation coefficient here. And so what we found is that, so this is the result when you have all the data, and that is when you exclude the patient 207, which was these outlier. So you see, it estimated the over dispersion. So this is at 19.4. It should correspond to an average of the numbers that we had on that table here. So remember, here we did a manual calculation over dispersion. So the model estimated 19. So this is also another thing. Be smart. If you make this table and you see that the over dispersion range between 7.3 and 13.8, and then you feed a model which allows for over dispersion, and estimate over dispersion is 62, there is a problem, or with your table or with your model, because that should be at the same range. And so it's approximately right. So 19.4 is within the ballpark of all the estimated over dispersion parameter. So this is our parameter of interest, which is not significant. Now, if you exclude the patient 207, It's close to, by doing a GEE with the exchangeable correlation structure, it gave you these estimates of rho, which the interpretation it's still pretty unclear to me. But in any case, it gave you a measure of how much within subject correlation degrees on this count data, which is actually pretty substantial. Okay. Now I was thinking there is definitely a main effect. Actually, no, there is really nothing significant here. So the only parameter that gets close to be significant, although it is negative, so basically it's in the right direction. Remember, a negative beta 3 means that this ratio is less than 1. So it means that you did have a lower number of epileptic seizures after the treatment at 3 when you are treated with respect to when you are not. Okay? So it is in the right direction. It really looks that the treatment is effective, and the results are almost significant. So it would be interesting, actually, to rerun the analysis, especially for the patient who was 7 deleted, under different models for the correlation structure. Remember, it would be interesting to see what happens if you do robust estimation and so on. Okay, so the results are very close to be significant. So that is basically the Poisson regression. Now we can take the same model and think about random effects. So the only thing I'm going to do before the end of the class is if you have the note that starts with random effect generalized linear model. So here. So basically what was this lecture was actually to come back to binary data but with random effect. And we have covered that, I think, quite extensively. So I'm not going to go again to the interpretation of the parameters because we have done that a lot. There is a... one point that although I want to go through, and then I just want to do an example, is that there is this relationship in. I'm on what is coming after, right? So I'm on page 5 of your lecture. I just want to point it out something. For population average and the logistic regression with random effect. So I just want to point out two models. So let's assume you have the largest of the probability of yj equal 1, which is equal to beta 0 plus beta 1 xij. And then you have, and so we call this a population average or marginal model. And then you have a model which say the largest of the probability of yj equal 1 given the random effect, which is equal to beta 0 star plus u con I plus beta 1 star xij. And then we say that u con I has a normal distribution with mean 0 and variance g. And then we call this a random effect model. Okay? So we went on nausea explaining these two models and say that the interpretation of betas is different, right? So one is the population average odds, the other one is individual level odds. We have the graph, and so what's happening is in general. So what I have in my equation one is that in general the estimate of the regression coefficient in a population average logistic regression model in absolute value are lower than what you get in the random effect. Okay, so the first equation tells you that the absolute value of the parameters for a population average logistic regression is lower than the absolute value of the parameters on the random effect. You get exactly the same estimate where the variance of the random effect is zero, and that makes sense. if G is equal to zero, there is no heterogeneity, population average and random effect model are the same, so the parameters are the same. But generally, the value of the t statistics, it's very comparable across the two models. Okay, so if you are interested to the estimating the beta 1, the point estimates of beta 1 could be different, but actually the strength of evidence having beta 1 being 0 or not 0 is actually very comparable across the two models. So that was actually there is a relationship that's what I think it's just important that it's fun, is that this is true all the time, is that for logistic regression, is that if beta is the vector regression coefficient under a marginal model, and beta star is the vector regression coefficient under a random effect model, and G is the variance of the random effect, this equation is approximately true. So you tend to see that the population average parameter is approximately equal to what you get from a model with a random effect times all this term and the variance of G squared. So you see that the larger is the variance of the random effect, bigger would be the difference between the parameters under a marginal model and the parameters under a random effect model. Okay, so that's pretty neat in terms that you know, if you take a logistic, so actually do it for, you know, by doing it for your exam, you can calculate the marginal logistic regression, and then you do the population average, you do the marginal logistic regression, then you do the random effect, and you have the estimates of the variance of the random effect, and actually compare and see if the equation is approximately right. And so I'm going to show you that the equation is approximately right with our favorite example of respiratory infection. So what I'm going to do, I'm just going to go back to the Indonesian health study, which is slide number 12. And so what we did is, this was the data set. So let's actually, so the last lecture we did a very large, last Monday, we went through this data set, remember? So that was last Monday, where we did the respiratory infection, the relationship between respiratory infection in preschool children, okay? And we extensively analyzed the data set, dividing, also looking at the relationship, the longitudinal information and the cross-sectional information. That was the table we got at the hand. Okay? What we did was we fit four different models. These were population average logistic regression models. And we looked at whether you had an effect of xerotalmia on the probability of respiratory infection. And we also look at the different relationship between the age of baseline on the probability of respiratory infection and the follow-up, okay? So that was all the discussion we had last Monday. And in this model, which was a population average logistic regression model. And we see this model using a generalized estimating equation. This was the log odds ratio. Okay, so basically these parameters were estimates of the parameter beta of population average. Okay, so now what I'm doing, I want to continue the same data set, the same data analysis, but now see what happens if you do a model with a random effect and show you that validate that equation. Okay, so now I take the same data set, so let's keep this table on the side. And now I feed this model, but then assume I can feed the same model. Actually, I can feed the same four models, but then I allow for a random intercept. So basically what I'm doing, I'm allowing that there is heterogeneity in the population of children in their propensity of respiratory infection, independent if they have xerotalmia, independent from the age, dependency of the height, everything else, right? So we can fit this model. So we assume the child have a distinct intercept, which represent their propensity of infection. So we kind of account for the correlation instead of estimating this marginal odds ratio by allowing a random effect distribution. And we get an estimate of the variance of the random effect, actually the standard deviation of the random effect, which is 0.72. Okay? So, you see, I conclude by this point that there is a considerable heterogeneity among children. Well, how I do that? Well, it's pretty simple. I basically, so you fit your model, you have your estimates of the intercept, and you calculate the probability of getting a respiratory infection for a child that it's, you know, really at the fifth percentile of the random effect distribution versus a child which is at 95th percentile of the random effect distribution. And so what you get a 0.025 and 0.31. So when we had that picture where you have the distribution of the random effect, you can say that baseline, the propensity of respiratory infection in our population can vary anywhere between almost 0 to 0.31. Okay? So there is a heterogeneity, but it's also not huge. It doesn't vary between 0 and 1, right? So this is a way of accounting. And now we estimate the relative odds of infection associated with the vitamin A deficiency is now 0.54, which is E, so basically E per 0.4 is 1.7, okay, which is not statistically significant. And so basically what I'm trying, yes, so this is what I was trying to show. See, so we had a distribution of the random effect, right? By feeding a logistic regression model with a random effect, we are able to estimate the random effect distribution, which has a mean zero, standard deviation 0.72. So you can say that the child which is at the lower end of the distribution will have basically this. So you can evaluate this probability for this child and this child, and so get a sense of what is the variability in the propensity of respiratory infection in your population. So among the children with the linear predictor equal to the intercept minus 0.2, that's what you get from your random effect model. So basically you will have about, you know, another thing you can say is that about 95% would have a probability of infection that vary between 0.03 and 0.31. And basically what we did is re-estimate the same table. This is a different table. But now this table, we have refitted the same, all the models, but now instead of allowing for, instead of feeding a marginal logistic regression model, we are feeding a logistic regression model with random effect. And so we get this estimate, you know, independently if you take, you know, how you parameterize the effect of age, you actually get very similar effect of the standard deviation. But now, the effect of xerotalmia here, it's 0 point, so if you look at this model, it's 0.69. Okay, so let's focus on model 3. Actually, now this is called model 4. So this is the same model. Okay. So under a population average model, you get 0.64 and a standard deviation 0.44. And under and the model with random effect, you just got 0.69 and 0.49. And you have this estimate of G that's 0.72. And if you take that number, you will see that satisfy the equation. Okay. Now the difference here from the population average estimate to the random effect estimate, it's actually similar because the heterogeneity is not so huge. Okay? Larger would have been the heterogeneity, and larger would have been the difference not only in the interpretation. I mean, we know and we've learned the interpretation of these two coefficients is different, but also, you know, their numerical value. It's highly dependent on the estimates of G. Okay? So now you know that when you estimate a model with a random effect, you have a higher estimate for the heterogeneity parameter. You know that your estimate of the odds ratio, in addition to having a different interpretation, will also have a very different numerical value. And you know what is the relationship between the two. Okay? So I think I'm going to conclude here for today. So I leave you, my promise, 10 minutes for doing the student evaluation. And then on Wednesday, we're going to revisit that. We're also going to do Poisson regression with random effects. And then we're going to do a review. And then we will conclude.